Is there any, just from your own perspective, speaking as you are as a biodiversity spokesperson, with the demand on land that's going to be driven by development, the recent proposal by the Citizens Assembly on having a referendum on biodiversity, do you see that potentially clashing at all with the need to develop housing on possibly greenfield sites even?
No, no, and I think that this is when we talk about environmental concerns and when we talk about necessary biodiversity measures, we always start off on that wrong footing of trying to create potential clashes between different stakeholders, whether it's agriculture, whether it's housing. It doesn't have to be that way. There is plenty of zoned land, suitable land to build houses on. You know, we also have Croí Cónaithe, which is aimed at redeveloping existing houses, houses that need renovation. So I don't necessarily think there's any potential clash between housing delivery and biodiversity, but right, I certainly welcome, by the way, that recommendation by the Citizens Assembly. I think biodiversity is in a pretty bad state in Ireland and we need every measure possible to protect it.
We know from our history that the wording is everything when you insert an amendment into the Constitution, though people have to be careful with this, don't they?
They do, although I do support the recommendation of the Assembly. And I think along with a number of the referenda, because they're all now stacking up, because we've had quite a lot of citizens' assemblies with good recommendations government hasn't implemented. But let me say two things, because I do want to come back to the local authority income thresholds. They haven't been changed for 11 years. So obviously it's a step in the right direction, particularly if you're in Dublin, the raising of the threshold to 40,000 is going to make a difference. But we have a bunch of counties that are still going to be left at 30,000. And that makes no sense whatsoever. We shouldn't have, in my view, three bands. I don't understand the reason why we still have a band of 30,000, 35 and 40. I think having two bands would be more reasonable. And all we've asked the minister to do today is, first of all, publish the research and the data on which he's based. But there are also other things. So families, for example, can be in receipt of payments like the family income supplement, or you can have adult children stuck at home right into their 30s because they can't move out because of the housing crisis. And we were hoping there would be some movement on those income disregards and the treatment of adult children's income, and that doesn't seem to be the case. And on the biodiversity stuff, because it's important we frame this debate correctly. So, for example, Fiona's right about apartments, particularly in the types of areas that she represents. But there are other parts of the world where, in fact, you can get 35 units, even 44 units to the hectare without any apartments. If you use low-rise, high-density development, they use it in lots and lots of rural and small-town communities in other parts. It hasn't been the fashion here, right? And I actually think one of the things we need to start doing is, one, yes, we need to have higher density development in our big urban centres.
Absolutely. We
can have the kinds of densities that you mentioned without a requirement to have apartment blocks where everybody can actually have own door onto the street. There are architectural typologies, it's what we call low-rise, high-density housing, and they work really, really well. So, in fact, rather than
seeing... So, build in the towns rather than on greenfield sites.
So, in the first instance, we do need to increase the availability of housing in our urban centres. People need it and want it, the people who don't want to commute. But where people...
We don't have the infrastructure
and that's the issue.
That's what we're seeing in Cherry Orchard as a problem.
My point is, with respect to the types of developments you're talking about, Fiona, because I have some sympathy with your point of view, you can do higher density developments in villages and towns and on the edge of towns at 35, right up to 44 units per hectare without having apartments. You can do 100% own door developments. That would require some changes to our planning regulations and our county development plans. But there are lots of examples of incredibly...
People in rural Ireland don't want to live in a small... Like the IGBC today recommended 75 square metres. Like, let's face it. People, teenagers or young adults will live in apartments for a short time. But then they decide to get married and have children. They want a house with a front and back garden. Developers are not going to build what people don't want. And if they can't sell it, they won't build it. Let's build what they want. The regulator has a one-size-fits-all policy. You're right. You can build apartments. Now, in certain parts of Dublin, I would say high-rise is acceptable. Not in all. But that's the only place where we have the infrastructure that matches the type of dwelling. We don't have it in rural Ireland. We don't want it in Wexford. But that's now what we're faced with. We have dezoning going on at a level where we're driving up the cost of zoned serviced sites by dezoning available lands.
And the referendum, Verona, on biodiversity, are you up for it?
I actually would have to consider it further. It wasn't something that I considered until I was asked this evening. I'm not sure it would have an impact. But at the same time, I can't really give an opinion. I don't have a concrete opinion on it this evening.
I think one of the impacts it would have.
It's a conversation. It's a conversation to start and to have. I mean, you know, it's not a case that a constitutional protection of biodiversity means that if you have a fly flying around inside your kitchen that you can't swat it away. You know, we're not talking about that level of protection. We're just talking. Look, the state has failed, unfortunately, time and time again, to comply with EU environmental law. And perhaps some constitutional Irish law might strengthen the
state
protection
is probably
for biodiversity.
The biggest offender in a lot of areas.
It's also really important to remember that the vast majority of people don't understand the scale of biodiversity loss, the scale of species loss, and the impact that that has on our natural habitats, on our agricultural well-being, on our urban areas. So actually having those types of referendums, in addition to the constitutional protection, that debate that you have as a society can be enormously rewarding. And given the centrality of the biodiversity crisis to the climate crisis, I actually think that's a debate we would really benefit from having. And I think once people would get into engaging with it, particularly the young people, if we get to speak about the SRI report, you'd see huge enthusiasm, huge participation, because people want to ensure we protect and promote best quality practice in the environment.
Can I just say, you know, it's ironic that we're discussing it now, because I've just come out of the Transport Committee where we discussed the tolls. Like, we allow 40,000 tonnes of fuel to be expended into the Dublin atmosphere every year, because we have a toll barrier there. And we're talking about biodiversity. I mean, we are paying fines, huge fines, to the EU for that. We have successive governments who refuse to do anything about it. And it's low-hanging fruit if we want to make a difference. And yet we could remove all our toll barriers. We can still have tolls, but the barriers are causing the carbon emissions and nobody's doing anything about it.
All right, okay.
We don't need a referendum. We just need common sense. And I've been elected for 2.5 years.
One of the nice findings of the ESRI report that Owen just mentioned there was that, you know, young people who spend more time in nature have a more sympathetic view towards
and
the environment.
And then they'd start to live in the real world.
You're encouraging us to take a walk, are you?
We should go down to the Wexford Wildflower Reserve, the two of us, and we'll spend
at 18 and 35. I was 18 once and I was 35. And when they start to live in the real world,
nature.
The questions that the ESRI asked them should be asked again, because everything changes.
What did you make of the ESRI?
I would like to see the questions. I mean, genuinely, I would like to see. I've been in half the schools in Wexford and I have interviewed everybody from first year to fifth
zones.
Year.
Well, just for anyone who doesn't know, Christina Finn, just to tell you, the ESRI's research showed what?
Showing that, I suppose, there's a confusion maybe between some young people about what they're willing to do and what they're not willing to do, cutting down on, you know, air emissions, car emissions, you know, making choices, I suppose, in their life. But I think Brona does stick on a point that I think it's really interesting in a cost of living crisis how easily people say, oh yeah, I'd definitely be willing to do that. But when they're asked how much it's going to cost in the long run or how much time it's going to cost them, people's answers tend to often change.
To give the older people credit as well. Sure.
Both older people and younger people seem to have the same level of awareness as to the impact of their actions on the environment. The only bad side is that that level of awareness wasn't the greatest.
Well, actually, first of all, to give the young people who are featured in the report today some credit, first of all, they actually had quite a sophisticated level of knowledge. Clearly, they thought that certain actions would have a higher beneficial impact in terms of emissions reductions and others maybe lower. So they were underestimating or overestimating certain actions. But actually, they, first of all, had a very sophisticated understanding. And for me, one of the really standout things was they understood that if the focus is purely on individual actions and the sanctions of individuals, it's not going to work. And that there are big structural issues which government is best placed to tackle, and whether it's transport and public
or
other interventions. But that's an important point, because it's those systemic changes that are the things, particularly as we're approaching 2030 rapidly, that I really need to take. What I'd also say is this, because actually I think sometimes the things I thought when I was 16, 17, 18 were far smarter than the things I think now. So it is important that we give young people a place.
Right.
They did a report a couple of years ago on people my age.
Okay.
Showed interesting results in terms of where public opinion was at, which isn't always reflecting the debates in the Dáil.
I think we're roughly of a similar age. They always find interesting things when they do reports on people of that generation. Christopher O'Sullivan, what did you make of the research?
I'm not surprised by the findings in terms of that 16 to 24 year olds.
But some of it was about around diet and people's willingness or not to eat meat. And the individual, actually, if people stopped eating meat, for example, that would in itself provide a pressure point on the policymakers as to...
And their health.
It also talked about carefree zones. It also talked about taking less flights. Maybe I shouldn't take those two or three flights a year and cut it down to one. It's something.
It's things to be considered.
But listen, if I could just come back to the attitudes of young people, 16 to 24. These are the same generation that two or three years ago, pre-pandemic, were taking to the streets of Dublin. They were taking to the streets of Cork. They were marching in the Fridays for Future, and they were trying to send people like us a message. Guys, we need action, and we need action fast. And government are listening. We have produced one of the most ambitious climate action pieces of legislation. We have the ceilings on emissions, the carbon budgets. We are putting things in action that will see reductions in emissions. But we need to listen to these young people. I'm going to continue to eat meat, but you know. There are other findings in there that we should...
But
Colm, do we not work off examples? I mean, when we talk about what the young people
we have to go to something else and an entirely different cohort of people taking to the streets about something completely different. We'll be back with that after the break.
The Late Debate with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.